What are you doing?
Smith.
Smith. What other name you have?
Reverend.
You have another name?
Maxine.
Omitha Maxine or Maxine Omitha?
Omitha Maxine.
Omitha Maxine Washington Smith. Okay. You were born in Ypsilanti.
No, I was born in Oklahoma.
Oh, you're born in Oklahoma. I see. And I knew your father had been from Oklahoma, but I didn't know whether he had come here directly out of school. When your father came to Ypsilanti, you know, when he came?
Yes, I was around 32.
And, of course, for the record, his name was Amos...
Spencer Washington.
And you came here around 1932.
No, I came in 37.
You came in 37. He came in 32.
Right.
Okay. And did he come here to teach?
No, he came here to go to the University of Michigan.
Oh.
He got his master's from Michigan in 34, I believe it was.
And what did he do? Did he teach or did he?
No.
Get into something?
Surprisingly, he never taught.
Oh, didn't he? Somehow I had a feeling that he had taught at least once.
Well, in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. But after he came here, he was working at Ford.
Oh.
As an electrician. And in 36, he started working with the CCCs.
Oh.
And he did do some teaching at that, yeah, at that time, because he was caught what they call the educational advisor. And, of course, he left Ypsilanti at that time.
How many siblings? There was you, I know.
And I have a half sister.
Half sister, right?
And I have a brother who's dead.
Oh, okay. And your half sister is named
Beverly.
Beverly
Washington James.
James, right? Mm-hmm. And you born at home? I didn't realize that. Well, you came here in 1937. Did you go, when you went to Lincoln, did you go from here, did you go from Oklahoma?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, I came to Michigan in 37, but I didn't live here.
Oh, I see.
My father was with the CCCs up in northern Michigan, and I lived up there.
Oh, I see.
I really did not. Although our home base was Ypsilanti, I really did not live in Ypsilanti until 41.
Oh. When did you go to Lincoln?
41.
41. that's the way we missed you. I believe we said that earlier. That was the way we missed you. Because Ruth and I married in June of 41 and September 41 when we went to Winston-Salem.
That's when I went.
Yeah. One of the things I've been trying to restructure, and I'd like to use your memory to some extent on that, I'm trying to restructure your father's work in Ypsilanti. Somehow I picked up an idea that once he had a store.
That's correct.
Where was the store?
The store was on the corner of Harriet and Hamilton.
Harriet and Hamilton. What kind of store was it?
The grocery store. At first, during the war, he had a cafe.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, he had two cafes.
Where were they?
One was in the, what is now the present post. And cafeteria room.
Present one?
Post over on Wharton Street, post 408.
Oh, Wharton. Okay.
There were a lot of migrants here at that time. Daddy ran, he was working for the Housing Commission, but he also ran this cafeteria at the post. That's what it was really built for, was cafeteria. And then we had a cafe at the corner of Harriet and Hamilton. And then after the war, and because it was too much for him, we closed the store, and then we had a grocery store next door. I mean, we closed the cafe, and we had a grocery store on the other side, old cafe became a cleaner's.
Oh. Who ran a cleaner?
Lena Anderson.
Exactly.
Lena Anderson.
Was she
not? Uh-huh.
That's a new one. I didn't know about that. I did a talk yesterday on Afro-American entrepreneurs. And I covered a lot of people, but I didn't know about that cleaner.
Then there was a Mrs. Myrta Stinson. She may have first ran the cafe after Daddy closed it. You know, Mrs. Stinson, didn't you? You know Benny Edwards? Was her mother.
Well, anyway, then he did run that business. Now, at that time, and of course, after leaving the business, was it after leaving the business that he ran for public office?
Okay. I would say that it was in perhaps 45 or 46. That he became a member of the city council somewhere in that period of time. I believe Mr. Seymour was the first person, and I think that was a short duration, and Daddy was very shortly. I think he really replaced him. Not replaced, because I think he ran for election, but he succeeded him.
And then I understand that he... How many terms did he serve?
I'm not too sure of that. I would say that at least 4 or 5 years that he was on the council, but I'm really not sure.
Well, then as I understand, he withdrew from the city council in order to accept the position as housing director?
Yes. Now, that would have been in the late 40s. Mm-hmm.
And then, was it while he was housing director that he became a member of the Board of Education, or was that after that?
No, that was while he was housing director. He remained housing director until the time he died.
Oh, yeah, okay. But then he was on the Board of Education then in the 50s.
Yes, he when Dr. Perry died, he succeeded Dr. Perry on the Board of Education.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Perry, I have that. Dr. Perry was on the board before that time. Well, that's interesting. Where I remember some of this is I was working with the alumni, and I remember getting the sheet back from him in which he was on the Board of Education, and that was in the 50s. And I didn't start it until 1950s. So that's the reason I knew it. And even though I never met your father personally, I knew about him because, you know, through the alumni thing. Well, anyway, you remember when did he die? What year did he die?
67.
Then you, of course, through your father, then you were here during a period of very active, I guess, progress and black participation in the community.
Actually, I was not here. I was away in school, and to actually live in Ypsilanti, I only lived in Ypsilanti from 43 to 46.
Yeah? When did you come back?
In 60.
60? Uh-huh. Well, that's a period. What did you call that period?
I came back in 1960.
Do you know when I came here in 60, I couldn't find a real estate man to show me a house?
With it.
Including Francois?
I don't think real estate has been one of our strong points.
No. I found that there was the first real estate man, the first real estate man, of course, was here back in 1880. I found the real estate man listed 1883. That was John Fox. But I don't find any after John Fox died. And John Fox died at age 32, and I haven't yet found out why he died or anything like that. But then the next one I found was, I think, by the name of Richardson, and in the 30s.
I think there was, I'm not sure, but I think there was a Richardson that was in Richardson.
And that was in the 30s, and that was even before Francois. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it might have been another, but those are the ones that stand out in my mind. And then there was not really an important
entity in real estate until our time, until really today. Same time that I've been here. Not really an important entity in real estate.
Well, we have not really gotten into real estate. I think chiefly because of nothing to help. People are kind of staid, and to get a listing, you've got to go out of the area, and usually it's kind of hard to find those people who wish to sell, unless it's somebody that knows you personally, and they call you up and say, "I want you to sell." Now, during the late '60s, when there was an urban renewal program, there were a number of houses built that I was a part of. But other than that,
selling went on between two individuals.
Yeah, it's very small. That we do.
Well, another thing I've been trying to do is to restructure that whole period in that of progress of Afro Americans in town, and I guess from information that I've gotten, that Ypsilanti was not too different from most places in that. A business like your father's restaurant and so forth was built upon a fact that they were not welcome at other restaurants.
At that time, you could not eat downtown.
Yeah.
You
know, that's a matter of debate, don't you?
Well.
Because I talked to some people who say they always ate downtown.
Well, maybe so. but you, let's put it that you were not welcome.
Yeah. Well, that's the reason I said not welcome. I have talked with some people who said they, even in the 30s in high school, they ate downtown. This is interesting, but I have sort of decided that it depended upon who you were.
It did. I am not certain that it's a fact, but I think I can remember some sit-ins downtown.
Yeah. I was just wondering about that.
Yeah, I think there were some.
Now, another angle that we were interested in also is this matter of employment. Now, you came back here in '60. And that employment, of course, was a part of this overall drive that black people were making. What was the situation with employment in Ypsilanti? Now, I know they could go to work for Ford and General Motors. But what about other employment?
I don't know. I wasn't too familiar with it. I could have joined the school system at that time, but I wasn't interested.
Yeah. Well, school system, of course, had opened up before anything else.
Yeah.
What about other things? What about banks?
As far as I know, at that time, there were no openings. I would say it was well into the 70s before any blacks got into the banks. And I know of no other management type of situations that they were in either.
What do you hold responsible for that?
Well, I have a twofold policy. I don't know if it's twofold, but anyway, in the back of my mind, I feel that opportunities in Ypsilanti were missed by blacks because of lack of preparedness. I'm not sure that I will always lay it to prejudice. I would say that we were not prepared. And I maintain this very strongly. It's my feeling. We do not have the background or the education to go into these fields when the opportunity does present itself, which, for example, like me managing this project. I got that job because I knew 2 years before the job was coming up, so I prepared myself.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. There is a kind of one word I think you overlook, and I was thinking along with you, I think inclination, too. we don't seem to be inclined to try to look toward the future. And that's really what you were saying. We don't seem to be able to look to the future to see what's going to happen and to be prepared. But we're always coming up with the rear, coming up in the rear. And after it comes, and then we're ready to go out and say, well, they won't let me do this, or they won't let me do that. But, one case in point on that is, I can't call a woman names, but there is a woman that's it's Savings Bank, who was there when I got here. Do you know who I'm talking about? And she's still there. And she has a very important position there.
I'm not too familiar with the Savings Bank.
I should remember her name.
She is a member of the Business Professional League. Mm-hmm. And I met her. Of course, I met her through that. But then in hearing people talk about her, I understand that she's been at that Savings Bank for some years.
As I say, I'm not familiar with the Savings Bank.
Perhaps the
term. I don't know. I can't say that because as I'm not really sure who you're talking about. I'm thinking she is a Caldwell. Is it Jordan? She's not a Jordan? No, the Jordan girl went to the city. I think she lives behind me.
Yeah.
Max something.
I believe it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe it is Max something.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Well, anyway, that was what I've been told. And that's usually given to me as an example of what one could do if they were prepared. Now, of course, I got here in time to, I guess, be in on the tail end of a kind of an era. Mm-hmm. And that is where they would call certain people when they wanted to hire somebody.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I was called by Gene Butler,
mm-hmm.
and asked to send him, he wanted to hire Black.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I got in touch with Gene Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And we sent him one.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the way they used to do it in the old days.
Yeah, it was depending on who you knew.
Yeah. But now the young man that we got came from the South Side. But he never would have applied on his own. You know him too. He was involved with that little newspaper out here.
Spencer Lewis.
Lewis, right. Yeah. Well, he was involved with that newspaper, and he had gone up to Eastern. He dropped out of Eastern. And when I saw him, I thought he was a pretty nice boy. At least he's hard working and honest. I don't know if he's still out there or not.
This is hard to believe, but I think I was close to the first or second or someone I'd like to graduate from Eastern that lived in this area. There were many people from Detroit, Blacks from Detroit and other area, but the people right here in Ypsilanti did not take advantage of Eastern at all. And at that time, the tuition was $33.50 a semester. Teresa Hamilton and I graduated at the same time. And Mary Clay, but before that time, they just didn't go. I don't know why. Many of them went to Cleary.
Yeah, I understand. Well, perhaps they saw more of an immediate future. The thing I'm thinking is, I talked to one woman who graduated from Eastern in 1916. But I think that was a one-year certificate. And she says the reason she dropped out was that there was no teaching, that you couldn't get a job teaching. And her idea was that if you finished, you had to take a job teaching and you weren't going to teach. Unless you were going down south to teach, then it wasn't important to finish it. So she still lives here, by the way. And she goes to our church. I'm not going to tell you her name. Because I haven't had a chance to write that down.
I often wondered about that.
Well, now, there were some that finished, at least. But now, you left room for that. You said they were not Ypsilanti people. And yeah. She's the only one from Ypsilanti that I know that finished early. The rest of them down with Maud Forbes and that bunch of people. Neil Clark, George Goodman.
Yeah.
Well, I know. I guess. Yes, Easton's tuition was $33 a semester, but it was still a hotbed of prejudice.
You know, I don't know about that. You know, when I started at Eastern, I walked in and entered the library program. There never had been a black in that program. And I don't know if it was my ignorance or what, but my father and I at all times had always chosen the classes I was going to take and et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I entered as a junior. Mm-hmm. And I did not bother sending an application to the School of Library Science. I walked in, and at that time the librarian's name was Miss Andrews. And I walked in and I announced the classes that I was going to take. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was due surprise or whatever, but they permitted me to enter the School of Library Science. So there I was. At that time, there were lots of people from other cities and places that came to Eastern, but I presume, like any place else at that time, there were prejudices.
Mm. Now, what year was that?
I came in 44 through 46. I was at Eastern. At that time, Michigan State Normal College.
I guess what I was doing was echoing. I guess the echoing that I was giving was a reflection of what some people have felt, even though they may not have been in a position to know.
Maybe I feel about prejudice a little bit different than a lot of people. I think confidence in yourself and your ability and the ease at which you go into something reflects more on how you feel about prejudice. And when you go into a situation with confidence and not looking for prejudice, if you look for prejudice, you go find it. But if you, to my idea, if you don't go in worrying about who's going to be prejudiced, I don't think you'll find that it's there. Now, maybe one thing about it was in most of the classes that I took, except something like government or literature class, I was the only black in it, so they didn't have to worry about me.
Were there, why did you get out of the library area?
Well, in Detroit in the late 60s and the early 70s, the school system underwent a radical change. And at that time, discipline was almost non-existent. And it became such a mental state for me that I dreaded going to work. And as I say, at that time, since 55, I had been involved in real estate, and when I moved to Ipsy, I got my broker's license. At that time, I thought I would get filthy rich under the urban renewal program. And Mrs. Dorsey sued the city and knocked that out. So I continued to teach. And then when I knew that there was a housing complex going to be built, I took steps to get out of the teaching field and do something else. And fortunately, I figured that with guaranteed salary plus anything I might make in real estate, mm-hmm. it would compensate me. So that's how I got here.
Well, I guess that's good thinking. Definitely good thinking. Were you, you said you remembered some of the sit-ins. Were you involved in any of those?
No, I was not.
Were you ever involved in any of the political machinations, as to say, in the election of many of these people we were talking about?
No, as I say, I wasn't here.
No, I'm talking about the 60s now.
In the 60s.
Remember, in the 60s is when you elected your first mayor.
No, I was not. My father was always the political activist. And I was not involved in it myself.
No, I think about, see, in 67, when John Burton was elected mayor, that's the first black mayor in the state of Michigan.
Yes. He held a unique position. I think there were only about two or three in the country at that time.
Well, of predominantly white towns.
Yes.
I always have to make that thing because there were a lot of black towns where they were.
Oh, yes.
They'd always traditionally been black mayors. We have a book that came out several years ago on black mayors, and in there you get some, some black mayors going back into the early 1900s. But predominantly they came in the 60s, particularly. But he was the first in Michigan, not the first in the United States in a similar situation. Well, I guess the thing that I want to get at is how you view this changing scene. For example, the talk I gave yesterday had to do with entrepreneurship among Afro-Americans. And after giving a trace of its development, let me see, the first being in 1838. And that was the barbershop. And of course, ending with Johnny Barfield and Williams and a few other people who are currently in business downtown. What do you see as the possibilities for blacks?
I think the sky is the limit. I am not real optimistic unless the average young man changes.
Man?
Well, I am more concerned about the achievement of black men than I am about the achievement of black women, because I like to feel that someday, black manhood will catch up with black womanhood in the Ypsilanti area.
Well, yeah, I guess that I would say the same thing all over.
Well, it disturbs me that you can't find a young black man interested in going into business, or in taking a management course, or in taking business administration, or preparing himself for any type of area in which he can achieve.
Uh-huh.
And I find, now for example, even before I knew there was going to be a hotel over there, and I'm still, every young man I see tell, go get you some courses in hotel management. There's going to be some job opportunities. And you know what's going to happen if that place opens next year and they say they've already committed 4 black administrative positions. In Ypsilanti, we don't have a single black to qualify for any of those. And they've already had a year or two prepare themselves. They will have another year or two, and there isn't going to be one.
What are you who are responsible for that? Is there any particular thing?
I wish I knew. Because my son is in the same boat.
Well, you don't seem to have any trouble. Your daughter seems to have a lot of drive.
I told you I wasn't worried of black women. I don't understand. In almost every young man that I run into, I try to talk to him about preparing himself for anything. And it, those I know that go to Washington now, it take them 6 years to do 2 years of work. And when they get through, they're not prepared to do anything. I mean, unless it's something I don't know about.
Well, I have to agree with you. I guess the thing that I'm really after is what is there that seemingly in some families there seems to be an orientation towards preparation for success, and in other families there seems to be the dead end.
I don't know.
And I guess the thing that my wife and I discuss all the time is why is this so prevalent among successful black families? Particularly, you take a family like mine, for example, where I am the first generation college graduate. Okay, my daughter graduated from college. The next generation is likely not to do so. According to what happens in so many cases. What is the reason for that? What is the right? And I mean, you only have to look around you at people even here.
I don't know the answer, because if anybody had told me that my son would not have graduated from college, I would have told them they were crazy. Mm-hmm. He was brilliant. When he went up in the 98th percentile, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was doing him a favor, sending him south to a black college, because I wanted that exposure to him, because I felt one, although I wasn't at Lincoln very long, it was a very big part, seasoning part of my life, because up to that time, when I was going to school in northern Michigan, I was either the only or the one of two, like, in a predominantly Polish town. my life was not a typical.
Yeah.
And I thought by sending Harry to a black college that I was going to expose him to all. He went to Clark. I was going to expose him to all of these educated black men, and he would be inspired, and etc. He found a wife.
What does he do now?
He is a car salesman for Ann Arbor Volvo. He's doing very nicely.
Perhaps that's part of what the problem is.
There's no problem, really, except that...
Well, I mean, the problem insofar as doing what you want him to do.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I what I'm getting at here is if they do well in something which makes few demands on them, then this tends to... many times they tend to be satisfied and put off. Only under pressure do many people go on. And I really wonder this about myself, for example. Well, I think I probably went to college to escape a depression. Mm-hmm. I had been washing dishes and shining shoes and mopping floors. And I think I went to college to escape that. But now, if I had been in an environment where I was making Ford employee money, I don't know what I would have done. Because, you see, there was a different kind of a thing. And especially in a family where, well, my mother was not a college graduate, so she couldn't expose me to what college graduation meant. Mm-hmm. Now, in your case, you had a father who had. But in my case, my mother had a third grade education. So all she could say is, I want you to do better than me, but she couldn't tell me how to do it.
I know what you
See what
mean.
I'm saying? There are different motivations that enter in. And I think I see in this particular area, I see the fact that blacks could go into Ford Motor Company and to General Motors and get, yes, jobs that are hard working and all that, but they pay good money. And one thing about most people, they don't mind working. Now, not many of these people are going to be a Gene Beatty. Gene Beatty said that was the reason he went to college, to get out of Ford's. And you find a few people like that, but the majority of them are perfectly happy. And especially if you look around, as some of my friends, say I got a friend in Brown Chapel, for example, who has 3 years of college. Her husband works at Ford, and he can hardly write his name, but he makes a lot more money than she makes.
I know. My sister makes more money than I make.
Okay, well, look at how the child looks at that. You see my point? I mean, unless he happens to be somebody who is basically lazy and figures, well, I'm not going to go out and do all that hard work. Or he looks at it and say, well, I've got my goal set on being an engineer or something like that. And he goes for that because he knows that's going to be satisfying. If it's just a matter of how much money am I going to work making my life, and I'm having a lot of fun now, and should I forego having my fun and all this kind of stuff, leaving my friends, and then they end up staying where they are. But it doesn't mean the same to him as it would have meant to me.
Well, I think that you're right. The money is a factor, and of course, these hard times and no jobs might turn a few people around.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case, but it's sad when you think of it, because I have always felt that Ypsilanti was a wonderful opportunity town. I don't believe anything is stopping anyone from being anything in Ypsilanti.
You by any chance, do you know this Williams guy that sells cars?
Yes, I know Johnny.
Johnny. Is Johnny at college rather than high school?
No.
Just high school?
I'm not even sure. I think he did, but I'm not even sure that he graduated from high school.
He said he graduated from high school.
Well, he possibly did, but I think as soon as, you know, he was from a large family and very poor, and the father died and was ill for a long time. His father was ill for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think Johnny went into the service right after his graduation and stayed there for a number of years. I'm not sure how many, but for a number of years he stayed in the service. And when he came back, he seemed to have a gift to gab.
Yeah.
And has done very well.
Yeah. Well, it's always interesting to me because, and I see, I didn't know all that about Johnny. But Johnny is very much concerned about the attitudes of young people.
Well, he would be. As I say, there were, I would say, at least 10 or 11 of those children. And the father was ill and did hand printing.
Yeah.
And that was just about their source of income, was printing the bulletins and so forth for the church. So they saw real hard times.
Yeah. Well, Johnny is very much interested in trying to indoctrinate young people to stay in school, and trying to show them the different kind of occupations for which they should prepare themselves. You know, I guess it's, and this had nothing,